Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you are in the known world, listening to this show live or on podcast later. This is Dr. Henson, and I'm accompanied by Dr. Chapman. And again, I want to thank you all for listening to Brother to Brother. Again, we are here for all of your mental health, community, love, attachment, and relationship needs. Dr. Chapman, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir.
Very good to hear your voice. Very good to hear your voice. For those that are listening again, as we always say, we always start out by thanking WMUL as well as Marshall University for giving us this platform to address mental health issues, identity issues, relationship issues within the community as well as in society. But as we always say, any of the perspectives or ideas or opinions that you hear on this broadcast, on this radio show, are not supported by Marshall University or WMUL, any of their supporters, affiliates, or any of their sponsors. These are the sole perspectives, ideas, and opinions of myself, Dr. Keelan Hinton, as well as Dr. Nate Chapman, okay? So as we always say, any of the perspectives or ideas that you hear may be therapeutic in nature, but this is not what, Dr. Chapman?
Not therapy, ladies and gentlemen.
And again, this may be therapeutic, and we hope that it is, but this is not therapy. So if something moves you in any way, shape, form, or fashion, at the end of every broadcast, myself as well as Dr. Chapman, generally Dr. Chapman likes to give out some resources that are here in the tri-state area, the greater Huntington area, okay? And again, as we all know, for those of you who have continued to support the show, Dr. Chapman, again, we have taken this show coast to coast. I am still in the great state of West Virginia, and Dr. Chapman is in sunny Southern California.
Yep, yep.
And we hate him for it. So, so again, as we always start out the show, how have things been? How have you been doing? What's been going on?
Yeah, man, things have been good. For me, we're on quarter systems. The quarter is winding down. I'm sure it's the same thing for you there with the semester. So there's all the hustle and bustle of that. I will say, man, it seems like a number of my students have been experiencing some type of effect of COVID. I know it's something that always comes up, but that's just something that's there. Like, you know, I've been getting messages from students telling me different things that are just, you know, unfortunate to hear, like, one, you know, just lost their father, and it's just, you know, a lot of grief going on in my circle lately.
Okay, and that's the same here. I think there's a lot of grief, a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety happening. I think that people are dealing with a lot, and some of it is just life. Life happens very, very fast, as well as some of it is due to everything that's happening socially with COVID, as well as the pressure of the holidays as well. So it's just a lot of things. It's a mixture of a lot of things that are happening that I think that has, you know, a lot of us in an emotional state. So hopefully people, as best as they can, are utilizing healthy coping skills. Again, developing good coping styles, good coping behaviors. And as we always tell everybody, as best as you can, try to take care of each other. Try to be nice. It costs nothing to say a kind word or to smile, okay? So moving forward, we don't have long. Again, we are here every Wednesday from 9 to 10. I like to start out with a meme that we both saw online, but it connects to something. It connects to our conversation last week. And for those that listened last week, you know, we started out talking about why do we buy and spend the way we do during the holidays? What is it that compels us to spend and spend and spend ourselves into an oblivion, to spend ourselves, you know, into debt? What is it that drives us? And one of the things that we talked about was we talked about the power of our childhood experiences. And a lot of times as an adult, you want your children to have everything that you didn't have. So again, not extrapolating that piece or taking out that piece. You know, today we'll talk a little bit about childhood, and how our experiences as a childhood, how they play an important part in sort of shaping and molding who we are and who we become. Okay. So there's a meme that's online that it's a mother. It's two images or two pictures. And it's a mother and she has a son. And he is crazy emotional. For some reason in the picture, he's emotional. We don't know why. The picture doesn't tell us why, but it just shows him emotional. He looks like a young child. And the meme shows the mother saying, "Stop crying. I'll give you something to cry about. Big boys don't cry." Okay? The picture beside it shows the boy is now a man. He's an adult. He's a grown man. He's sitting at a table, and there's a woman in front of him, and the caption, or what she's saying, is, "What's the problem? Why is it that you can't show me any emotion?" And it's something that we've talked about before. We've talked about it on other shows. We delved into some of this. Hopefully, we again, we tried to do a little advertising. We put out advertising for a panel that we were both on last week, Manifest panel, which was done by Mr. Ronald Jones, who holds amazing discourse, as well as Ronald Jones has his podcast with Mr. Holmes called the Game Recognized Game Podcast. So if you guys out there like podcasts, like talking about controversial issues, it's definitely a podcast you can check out. It's something that we talked about there, something we've talked about on our show. And this notion or idea of making our boys into men. But most importantly, we wanted to talk about and sort of unpack this meme and some of the ideas that are implicit in it. What is this? What are these two pictures telling us? What are these two pictures saying? We have a picture of a mother looking at her son saying, "I'll give you something to cry about. Big boys don't cry." We later see the same boy become a man. And there's a woman in front of him asking him, "Why aren't you emotional?" So when you hear that description, Dr. Chapman, what feelings or emotions or thoughts does that stir up for you to start us off?
Yeah, you know, I'm sitting here looking at the meme right now. I think that definitely there are some cultural implications. And obviously, depending on the environment you grow up in, the parents, your church folk, all these things are going to influence how much emotion you feel like you can express. So it might be different for different groups of men, but I think in general, it would be hard to deny the truth that men are discouraged from showing certain emotions. And the bigger one of those emotions that's depicted in this, the meme is sadness. And so we see in our society a lot of times there's a concern about toxic masculinity, that phrase, and however that wants to be digested. But the whole idea of emotions not being shown correctly, and the emotion that's going to be shown instead of sadness is going to be anger. And why is that? Well, there are some cultural implications to that, like why that's accepted. So this meme is just illustrating the one part with the mom, and the mom stating to him, "You know, I'll give you something to cry about because boys and men don't cry." And you see the image of him crying. So then, like, what am I supposed to do with these tears? Then you go forward to him being in a relationship and this woman wanting that to come out and getting frustrated that's not there, but probably not really understanding the full context of why it's not there. So when I'm thinking about it, I'm not just blaming it on mom. And even if mom has to contribute to it, it's not. She is a part of a bigger system. Right. If that in this meme, if that expression does come to mom, it's her trying to be protective of her child because she knows he's going to have to go out there and be a man. If he doesn't, then that's going to be hurtful for him. She's probably doing it in a protective way. I think it's interesting when it came up in our panel, because I really did get like another side of it. I hadn't thought, you know, that, you know, maybe there's this illustration that in some groups or maybe women of color that they're actually allowed to be, we may think they're allowed to be more emotional than society allows them to be, because that may be true. It also doesn't take away from what the male might experience, though.
Yeah, what I find interesting, and first of all, I agree with all that. What I find interesting is, and I think it's clear, we have to be clear that we aren't necessarily saying, we aren't saying that it's the mother's fault.
Right.
I do think that, I think you're right. I think it's complicated. I think it's a part of what we're seeing is cultural socialization. Like the goals and values and beliefs of the society and culture with which we live in, we take those values and those beliefs. I think it's interesting that we always talk about toxic masculinity, but we never ask, why are men toxic? I can't remember. Toxic masculinity it seems to be some sort of identity or label that we put on people, but we never ask why. And the question is, why don't we ask why? We never ask why men are toxic. You want to know why? Because I think that speaks to philosophically how we see people. We don't see people as complicated systems. We see people as good or bad. I think that's such a poignant and important point. It's something that we should think about. Think about that now. We don't see people as people who do good or bad things. They're good people in this world and they're bad people in this world. And your actions sort of show me which box or which group you're in. So we see men who do horrible things. And that's not me saying that there aren't men that do horrible things or do sexist things or whatever. We see men who do these things and we say that they're bad people. We never ask why. And I think that it's an important question to ask. We need to start to ask the question, why are these men? Again, you'll only ask the question if you understand and give some integrity to families matter, communities matter, school matters, the society you live in. It only matters for those that understand how complicated life is and all of these things shape and mold us. We have to ask why. If men are toxic, why? And when we do that, it gets complicated. And if we're going to keep it real and we're going to be honest on the show, let's go down this road. A lot of the toxic it's hard to have that conversation, and we never ask that conversation because we don't want to say that women also play a part in male toxicity. We don't want to examine it because then it sounds like, I'm not saying that... Because if we make that statement, then what that means is we're blaming the victim. You're a part of the problem. You're being used. You're being abused. But I think it's complicated. I read a stat, and I want to say real quick, and I'm sorry. I read a stat that is like 78% of teachers are female. It's kind of like, you know, what is it? Almost 40 or 50 some odd percent of kids grew up in single parent homes.
Mm-hmm.
These men are being raised and taught by women. So how do these men become toxic? Now, again, I want to be clear. I'm not saying it's women's fault. I believe it's a systems thing. I believe that the behavior that men display are a part of our overarching society. And I think that all of us buy into these values. And I think you make a good point. When mothers are hard on their sons, a lot of it may be a protective factor. I'm raising this boy, and I understand, I know what happens to weak men.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard, and this is anecdotal, I know, but I've heard of single mothers talk about feeling like they have to be hard on their sons because they don't want their sons to get older and try to run over them. But also, there is this, but it's not just women. Like, as a society, we feel like it is much more of a burden to make a boy into a man than it is to make a girl into a woman. Like, we have to make our boys strong. We feel as if we have to make our boys strong. We feel as if our boys have to be tough. Why? Because boys will become men. Men lead. Men lead families. You know, men have to go off to war. So we have to chisel him and make and mold him into a strong, quote unquote, capable being. And that emotion stuff will get you killed in these streets.
Oh, yeah, it will. I think that the point about being chiseled is, like, a really important point for people to think about. And again, it's not just coming from just the mom, but it's messages coming from everywhere that this is how it's supposed to be done. I was watching an interesting little, I don't know, 8-minute clip on Shaolin monks. And, okay, you know, they can break stuff with their fingers. It's a random cool thing. But how they get to the point of doing that is a ridiculous amount of training, you know, so they have this mental and physical strength that that's supernatural. And I think when we're growing our young men, we think about it like that. We got to chisel them. We got to make them like a Spartan or something. And so they're going to be able to, the only way they're going to be able to withstand all the troubles that this world is going to give them is if we get all the weakness out of them. And in some circles, that weakness is showing that sadness and those other expressions of emotions. And they will get you killed in certain encounters, depending on where you're going up in situations. And even if you go back to like kind of like earlier days, if we think about the prehistoric man, yeah, if you don't have strength in front of an animal trying to kill you, you're going to die. But the thing is, just because you teach someone that an emotion is not acceptable, if it's a real thing and sadness is, that doesn't mean it goes away. But then where does it go?
That is what is so, like, that is such a dope and such a poignant question to ask. It doesn't just go away. Where do these emotions go? Because again, we talked about, we had one of the best conversations, one of the more thoughtful conversations we've had was last week when we talked about this idea of unfinished business. This notion or idea that we have these series of unfinished events in our lives that we don't face, that we just sort of, they happen to us and we move forward. And it's like unfinished business, like it lingers within our physiology. These experiences and these traumas linger in our body. They linger in the back of our minds. And if you don't deal with something, it manifests itself in some way. So the question is, how do these unexpressed emotions manifest themselves in the lives of men? That's the question. And it's weird. I said this before. It's like, you know, we tell our boys, big boys don't cry. That boy becomes a man. He has no emotional tools. And I've said that before on several shows before, but I think the important part is this. Like myself and many other men out there, like, it's confusing. Like, it is truly, truly, you are truly confused because you've been given this message. And again, I want to be clear. This is not me in any way, shape, form, or fashion trying to justify whatever toxic masculinity is, or me trying to justify inappropriate behavior, or me trying to justify people not respecting people. Again, this is what we do. It is our jobs to pick apart situations and get to the why without bias, hopefully, as best as we can. And obviously that is impossible, but as best as we can. Like, you know, what happens to those emotions? We never ask that question. So, I don't know. Yeah. Any thoughts you got?
Well, I wanted to say one thing, and just speaking for myself, like, I like being able to have these conversations, you know, and I think that in my mind, when our goal was to have this show is that we would open up people to our man cave and just, you know, have two conversations among two black psychologists and see where it goes. And I think I do my best when I present my whatever my thoughts are to try to eliminate bias. But the reality is, I'm telling you this perspective from the way that I see the world. So I could never eliminate the bias. I put it out there, give you something to think about, and then you could either agree or disagree. But I'm just trying to give it to you as raw as I can give it to you. And when it comes to this idea of emotions and where they go and what happens, I think it's a real interesting question because whether it's male or female, but just sticking with the male, for instance, if I got, let's just say, something that's making me sad, and I have learned that it's not okay for me to show sadness, which means it's not really going to be okay for me to talk to, you know, my girlfriend or wife about it, or probably anybody, because I mentioned this last week, but I think it's something for our listeners to know. Research suggests when it comes to males, even though they may have a whole bunch of guy friends, when it comes to really being given information about their life and going deeper, generally they lean on whoever their closest female is for that. And if they feel like they can't disclose this stuff to that female, they're probably not going to disclose it. Or if they do, it's going to be in a way that's going to be what they seem to be more productive to other people. So the importance of it can't be understated. But if I can't show them, then it's probably going to show up in behaviors. Like maybe I drink my pains away. Maybe I eat my pains away. Maybe I work my pains away. Maybe I run through as many women. Or if this person happens to be, you know, either bisexual or some other sexual orientation, run through people. Whatever I can do to get rid of these feelings so I don't have to feel them, and whatever I can drown it out with, then I'll do that.
That's interesting. This, we talked about this before. Like, people need a break from their pain. You know, like, that is, again, that's not an excuse for inappropriate behavior, but people just, they need a break from their pain. What I was going to say was this idea that I think that it's hard for people to understand this idea. And I think that this will resonate with some men that are listening. It's like, men truly are confused sometimes. It's like when we grow up to become the monsters that we've been made and molded into being by society. There are men who are truly, they truly don't get it. All of my life you tell me to be strong. All of my life you tell me don't take nothing from anybody. All of my life, if somebody hits you, you hit them back. You know what I mean? Because you're going to be, you know, they're going to look at you like you soft. You got to be aggressive. You got to be an alpha male. You got to be a man. You got to lead. And then all of a sudden, when I grow up and I start to do the things and use the tools, the only tools that I've been given, now I'm toxic. And it's kind of like, this is what you told me to do. But this is what you molded me into. So it's kind of like, again, those who are listening, I know you're like probably yelling at your radios or TVs or whatever now. We're not talking about right or wrong right now.
Right.
We're talking about perspective. We're talking about, this is the perspective that for some men, their families and their communities and the society with which we live in, we cannot ignore the fact. Again, I always say, this ain't rocket science. You can't tell these boys that big boys don't cry and to be a man and to be strong and don't be soft, and then all of a sudden with a straight face expect him to grow up and know how to love. You can't. I wish it were some other way, but from what we see through qualitative research, like, you get, he will become whatever you make him.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't hug him and you don't kiss him, he won't know how to hug and kiss a lot of times. If you don't ask him how he feels, he won't know how to ask other people. He won't be thoughtful enough probably to ask other people about their feelings. We are loved the way we're loved. And we interact with people typically the way that we interact with other people. Again, we're not talking about right or wrong. People deal in the world with the tools that they have. Real quick before you speak, Dr. Chapman, I want to give a station identification. Again, this is Marshall University, WMUL 88.1 FM. Again, this is Dr. Hinton as well as Dr. Chapman with Brother to Brother. And again, we're here talking about mental health, community, emotion, and attachment. So again, just want to give a quick station identification for those that may be tuning in. Continue, Dr. Chapman. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, yeah, so there's a couple of things I thought about. And one is just when we're thinking about raising, whether it's a boy or a girl, but coming back to specifically thinking about boys, you know, you're talking about affection and giving affection and what that might look like. I think the other thing that's not really done when we have an impression on what we need to chisel, we don't take the time to really get to know that boy for who he is, to figure out. I mean, because it could be that you teach them about affection, but just by their own personality traits, they're not really an affectionate kid. That could be a thing. But you may never know that because you don't really get to know the kid well enough to know what works for them and what doesn't work for them. I think the other thing that's interesting, I mean, I know a lot of single mothers, and I have some friends that are really, the way they see it, they're trying to shape their kid to be more aware, to be not necessarily isolated by roles. And so they might take them to do like things like ballet and other things like that. And I think some of the things that they hear from my listening to them is that there's well, what are you doing with your kid? You know, you're making them soft. So even when you got a parent that is trying to change the way that the molding and shaping is going, there's still the outside influence that's happening from society and the cultures in which they live, which is strong.
Those are good points. I think a good question to also ask is, where does this come from? Where does this need or this drive to make our boys into men and make our men strong and even speak out? I think you make a good point. It's none of your business what somebody else does with their kid. But for some reason, we will speak up about other people's children. You're making them soft. Oh, you got them going where? You're taking them to ballet? Is that what you're really doing over there? Like, for some reason, we actually feel like it's our place to say something. And
like our duty.
Yeah, literally, we feel like we have to speak up, you know, when we see boys not being typical boys. And in my opinion, I wonder, as I always say, no matter how fancy our cars get, no matter how fancy your telephone gets, you got a smart TV, I don't care how technologically advanced we get, at the end of the day, we are animals. And I wonder if a lot of what we do and a lot of why we do what we do is driven by evolution. So we've talked about this before. A lot of research shows that for whatever reason, people have, and it's something we touched on a little bit earlier before the show, people have a different response to two men in a relationship as opposed to two women. And the question is why. Now, on the surface of it, I've heard people say, well, two ladies together, well, that's exotic, that's hot, and two guys together, well, that's just gross. Now, and to be clear, that's not my opinion. But the question is, where does that come from? Why do we feel differently about two men together as opposed to two women? And I wonder if at the core of it is some evolutionary psych stuff. I wonder if at the core of it, does somewhere in our DNA, somewhere in our being, does that feel like a threat to survival and reproduction? Now, I'm not saying that I'm right, and I'm not saying that's what it is. I'm saying, as we always do, we're always trying to explore ideas and think organically in the moment. I wonder if that's what it is. I wonder if somewhere in our DNA we feel threatened, like we, you know, we feel threatened from an evolutionary reproductive level. So bringing it back to our conversation here, when we see boys not being quote unquote boys, why is that such a threat? We feel this, we feel compelled to say something when we see our boys not being rough and rugged and tough. I wonder if on some deep evolutionary level, there is, we feel threatened because we, to some degree, we understand that we need men for civilizations to move forward and go on. I had a conversation that, I'm sorry, I mean to talk too long, but I'll say this and I'll give it to you. I had a conversation at a conference that I went to in Phoenix. This was a few years ago. And we was talking about some racial identity stuff. And there was a guy there, and he talked, you know, we was talking about identity and history and how, you know, a black male identity and all this kind of stuff. And this guy was like, the way it has always been known that the way that you kill a culture is through its men. And he said, that's why the guy just so happened to be white. Okay. He said, that is why there has always been an attack. And again, this wasn't my statement. This is a statement that he made. That's why there has always been an attack on black men, or not just black men. When any culture is invaded, you go get the men. So it's like, because men initiate intimacy, you need men, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if some, again, back to my original point, I just wonder if somewhere when we see boys not quote unquote being boys, whatever that means, I wonder if that's where it comes from. We feel it. We feel a compulsion to say something. We feel like it's not right when we see boys not doing boy stuff, or when we see boys doing stereotypically feminine stuff. We just feel this compulsion to say something, but we don't know why. And I wonder if that's it. And I haven't really seen a lot of people. And it's probably out there. I just haven't dug for the research. I haven't seen a lot of people that's really sort of really attacked and addressed that perspective. What say you?
I don't know. That's a lot. That's a lot to think about. I'm still chewing out what you just said about what the guy said on the airplane. I mean, it kind of took a separate angle in my mind, but I was just thinking about digesting that statement, and it had me going a lot of places, slavery and whatnot. But let me come back. I don't know. I mean, that could be, there could be some. I think one reason that people have this visceral need to respond, even though it's not their child, is because we're always doing a little bit of projecting, you know, like a little bit of like, even though this is not my child, what if that was my child? And that compels someone to make such a strong argument because they can't really separate the outside from the inside. I mean, I think that's why most people have most problems with most things, you know, like you go to someone's house, and it's a separate issue, but still thinking about this in the same context. You go to someone's house, you see their house is messy. You're a person that doesn't believe anything should be messy. That's why you get so angry about that house being messy, is because you can't separate them from you. And there could be some evolutionary standpoints to it. I mean, there's some things that we all culturally get around for survival. But at the heart of it is, I think it should be this way, so you should follow what I think.
I think that's it indeed. All right, everybody listening, again, this is Brother to Brother, WMUL 88.1 FM. We want to thank you for joining us. Thank you for continuing to support us. We're going to take a quick 1 minute break. We're going to take a pray a couple promos. We're going to come right back and we're going to rock and roll. Thanks for listening.
A social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
My dastardly plan to pollute the airwaves with Nickelback is almost to rotten fruition.
We must let our powers combine. Jazz.
Avant venenos and sparks.
Rock and roll.
Flashback.
Ska.
With your powers combined, I am WMUL.
Oh no! WMUL's award-winning radio programming is kicking my...
88.1 WMUL.
Yeah, I knew Joe. He was a friend of mine. Always liked him. We used to hang out, you know? Well, I noticed he started acting different. You know, keeping to himself more, not eating right. His grades even began to drop. I thought it was just because he and his girlfriend had just broken up. I mean, it seemed natural. I mean, I never thought that Joe would be the type to...
On an average day, 84 people die from suicide, and many more attempt to end their lives. If you, or someone you know, is having trouble eating, sleeping, or has started talking about suicide, tell someone or get them help. Don't let your friends say goodbye. Goodbye. This message brought to you by your friends at WMUL.
All right, we are back again. We are on our last 20 minutes. Again, this is Dr. Henson as well as Dr. Chapman. And we are here for another edition of Brother to Brother. Again, here for all of your mental health, community, attachment, love, relationship needs. Again, for those, again, who would like to participate or who have any questions or concerns about anything they've heard tonight, as we always say, you can email us at b2bpsych@gmail.com. That's b2bpsych@gmail.com. And today we're talking a little bit about the pressure of making boys into men and this notion or idea of how we always talk about how toxic men are, but we never really, as a society, we never really ask why. We never really ask what made or what's making and molding our men into these toxic beings. Or is it, are men just genetically flawed? And that's sort of the perspective that I take, and I want to speak for Dr. Chapman, but myself, is I think that people are complicated, that environments matter, families matter, society matters. The things that happen around us shape and mold us all. And a part of what we're talking about is, again, we're talking about how very complicated the identities that men develop, how very complicated it is, and how the way we raise our boys as fathers and as mothers, as families, the responsibility we feel that we have to raise our boys. Maybe our families are taking these characteristics and identity traits from our overarching society, and we're giving these traits to our boys because we feel like this is what they need to survive and thrive. So this is where we are. Just sort of going back and forth and trying to debate and trying to figure out again, when we talk about the messages that we give our boys, what can we do How do we fix this? Because it's easy for us to sit, and again, it's important. We talked about a meme that we saw. It's so very important for us to remind people. We're not saying, because the meme had a mother in the picture saying, big boys don't cry. We want to be clear. Fathers give that message. Fathers give that message to their sons also. So I think it's not, I don't necessarily think that it's women's fault. It's men's fault. It's a family thing. It's a cultural thing. It's a society thing. Like the families are getting these cultural values, beliefs, and identities from the overarching society we all live in.
Right. And well, you know, we're not saying that it's just one person, but I do want to just highlight that meme for a second, because the meme is showing the mother-son relationship, and then it's showing this grown person with his significant other or somebody's dating. So that mother relationship becomes really important in context of that situation.
How so? So are you saying that the relationship that boys have with their mothers is a template or is a blueprint for how we will learn to love women in our lives?
Right.
That's interesting. This was years ago. I did some research and I met some guys that were doing some research on men who were abused by their single mothers. And they made a connection. The connection that they made was a lot of these men in their later lives were hard on their partners because, as one guy said in some focus groups, hard on his partners is like displacement of energy. Like the abuse that I received was at the hands of a woman. So when as he got older and he was in a position of power and control, he displaced that energy. Now, I don't think that that's just a mother-son dynamic. I think that that dynamic will happen with dads, you know what I mean? Like this, it's, again, I don't think it's a mother thing. I just think that the relationships with our fathers and mothers and our care providers, I think they probably lay a foundation for how we learn to love and how we interact in the world a little bit later. And it's, again, when these things happen to us when we're younger, we have these, like we said, stuck points. We have this quote-unquote unfinished business. And when we don't deal with it, it manifests itself.
I do too, but I think that just making it more specific on that dynamic and how that dynamic replays itself is from a psychodynamic perspective. So, yes, it's true that all the relationships matter, but in the context of that relationship, the mother relationship would matter more. Just like the example that you just gave, you know, and you think about displaced energy, that's one way to think about it. Another way to think about it is protective energy. So this young man, when he was younger, if he was abused by his mother, whatever way, physically, verbally, he experienced her as controlling. And what he does in his relationships now, whether it's abuse or not, is like a protection from what he assumes he'll face unconsciously with this woman. So definitely that dynamic from a psychodynamic perspective would be different if that wasn't the early situation.
Hold on. Say that again. That is such an important point. It's such an important point to make about the why. Why this displacement of energy is happening? What am I trying to achieve? Because, as we said before, there is a thought behind every emotion, and there's a reason behind these behaviors. People aren't just willy-nilly just walking through the world, just sort of tearing and causing chaos. They feel like it serves a purpose.
Exactly. So with that point, you can use the meme, I think, kind of illustrates that, right? You see the woman, the mom, telling the kid, you keep crying, I'm going to give you something to cry about. That's just one part of it. But the dynamic is you got to be strong. Otherwise, you're being weak. There's consequences to it. So if I show these emotions in this relationship, remember, all this would be at an unconscious level. So it's not like this guy is walking around saying, like, this is why I'm not showing emotion. And the female is, like, very upset that he won't show emotion, so it seems like that's what she wants. But what he has learned is when you do show it, this is what happens. And this has been something that's been ingrained in an early level for him. This is from a psychodynamic perspective. So for those of you who don't believe in psychodynamics, that's fine. I'm just giving you that perspective.
For me, the issue is, and you and I, and the question is, are people open to other interpretation of behavior? That at the end of the day, no matter how much we talk about, no matter how much we teach, no matter what we talk about, no matter how many examples we give, the question is, are people willing to be open to some of these ideas about why, and we're specifically talking about men, about why men are the way they are? Because I would dare say it's hard. It's hard. It's easy for me, if someone hurts me, it's easy for me to say you're a bad person. It's easy for me cognitively and rationally to make those connections. You hurt me, you know, you're toxic. This is toxic masculinity. You hurt me, you're a bad person. Those connections are easy to make. They're easy for me to understand. It's easy for me to put together to understand my world so I can move forward and go on with my life. I think it's a hard thing to realize that you may be a good person, but you got bad tools.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what to do about this relationship. And then I start to blame myself. This person is toxic, but I understand he or whoever has been made and molded to be this person. So it's kind of like, I love him and I care about him and I know it's not his fault. You go through that whole range of stuff trying to figure out how to process what's happening to you. It's just so much simpler to say you did something bad, you're a bad person, I shouldn't be with right. bad people, and rock and roll and move forward.
Man, like, I want to highlight that for a second because I think that's big, okay? Like, I'm not saying that someone should just stay in a toxic situation or dangerous situation, but what I do recognize, just in couples in general, I'm not saying the situation is toxic, but it's very easy. It doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman, to make that other person you're in a relationship with or your sibling or whoever a monster. And it goes back to what you said earlier today. Sometimes we look at people as black and white. We just assume that, you know, if you do something that slights me, then you're a bad person. Or if you do something that's good, that you're a good person. But the reality is we're all capable at times of being monsters, and we're all capable at times of being angels. And then what it takes is to recognize that and think about, okay, so when someone is appearing to me to be like a monster, what's behind that? It may not be your business to fix what's behind that, but recognizing it behind that can help deflate the monster.
I think that is what you just said is key. I've said it once, I'll say it again. Relationships aren't about love. They are about, is this functional? Is this healthy? Can I help my partner grow? Can they help me grow? That is what a relationship is about. And just because you love someone and just because you care about somebody, that don't mean that y'all can be together. That don't mean that y'all should be together. At the end of the day, this is just me personally, Keelan Hinton, I don't believe that love is all it takes to make a relationship last. It has to be functional and it has to be healthy. And I'm saying that to say, just to piggyback off your point, is it your responsibility to fix someone? Can you fix people? Because that is what we do. And we put ourselves in these situations. And we see this with women a lot. If I love him enough, if I pray enough, if I love him enough, if I do the right things, he will heal. I can heal him and he will be okay. And God bless women, because women sacrifice all of who they are for other people constantly. We just talked about this last week, Dr. Chapman, didn't we? This notion or idea of how we see the women in our lives constantly sacrificing for other people so much and so often that they neglect their own emotional well-being, their own emotional health. And that is not what we need. That is not what anybody wants to see. And you can't adequately love anybody else if you yourself ain't whole. So yeah, So just I just want to say that the idea is, you may see, even if you have an understanding that this person has a bad past and it's not their fault, they're a monster, the question is, Can you change someone? Should it be your responsibility to try to change somebody and heal somebody? Do you have the power to heal someone else? Sorry, go ahead.
Right. But I think it's also taken it a step further than that, because there could be a situation where, you know, whatever, they got so much stuff going on that it's not going to work for you, because those things, whatever they have going on, bring up the things that you're sensitive to, and that makes for a bad relationship, all those different things. But there's also times when people have monstrified people. When I say that, I mean they have basically turned this person into an evil person they could never live with because of some things that they do that have a bigger story behind them. Not a story that you need to change and fix, but a story that if you really understood, they wouldn't be a monster anymore. The thing that makes some of these relationships, and I'm talking about a relationship where people just have some things that you don't like, and it's not to a point where you can't get along together, but you've made it that way because you made this person a monster. When you are able to deflate the monster, then you can have a real relationship.
That's an important, another poignant point. This notion or idea of when you can get out of your own, if there's a way to get past your exaggerations of the issue, and that's not to say that there aren't issues.
Right.
But you have to figure out, are these issues truly as big as I think that they are? And sometimes I think that that is where our own personal experiences come into play.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I've been hurt in the past, and you're doing something that mirrors something else. Can I deal with this?
Right.
How much of a lack of patience, not just for women, men, everybody, how much of our unwillingness to try, our unwillingness to talk, our unwillingness to communicate, how much of our unwillingness to do whatever stems from our past experiences? You know, I have made you into a monster. Why? Because of other experiences that I've had. When, like you said, if I just knew the person's story, I would understand it, and maybe this is something doable, or this is something that is workable. But I've had these experiences that this mirrors something that I felt before, that you're obviously a monster because you're mirroring a monster that I've seen before.
Right, and that will come with titles usually. It'll be like, oh, you know, this person is this. They're, big-headed. They're whatever, whatever. And I'm not saying that person may not have some of those things, but when it gets exaggerated, here's the problem. Once you go down that path of you figured out that this is the way the person is, they can't get out of it. It's like they're in a prison that they don't have the key to. You got the key. They're trying to get out. They're trying to show you they're not that person, but you got the key. They're locked in with the key you gave them, and you're the only kind of lock it, but you're sure that they're that type of person, and so they can never get out.
That is so scary. This, for some reason, confirmation bias keeps popping in my head. And this notion of idea of once you have, I mean, this is like at the core of racism.
Yeah.
I have this idea of who you are, and that idea, racism or sexism or any ism, right? I have this idea of who you are, and this idea informs the way with which I see the world. It informs and it plays an important part in what I see and what I don't see. And most importantly, how I give interpretation to what I see. That is so, that's dope. That is amazing. This notion or idea of how these preconceived notions inform how we think, how we feel, how we interpret, how we see the world. And for some reason, write that down and put a pin in it. We've got to come back to that. That's actually scary for me.
Let me just add this one point. That we're coming up on time. So that point you just made, putting it together, like with that confirmation bias, right? We'll go back to this meme. So we'll just say that the person, the woman in the later one when she's talking to him, what might be going on her mind is, man, this guy is emotionally out cold. He never available. You don't care about me. You don't think about me. That may not be going on in his head, though. But it don't matter if she's locked him into that. And that's the monster.
So every time he doesn't speak, or he isn't thoughtful, or he doesn't show emotions, it's you don't love me. You don't.
Right.
That is my interpretation of and again, especially if we've had experiences, if we've had those experiences before, we develop a lens and it paints the way we see the world. And it paints the way we give interpretation to the world. Why am I blanking on his name? Robert Sellers, Dr. Sellers, University of Michigan. I don't know if he's in Michigan now, but talked about identity development, talked about salience and centrality. The experiences that we have feed into how we think about the world. So it's like, we was talking about Hurricane Katrina. You know, I had some of my African-American friends that were like, oh, they don't care about them because they're black. And then I had some friends that weren't African-American that were like, why is this a racist thing? They're trying. The experiences you have feed into how you think about the world. They feed how you literally, how you see the world and give interpretation to what you see. Everybody's looking at the same situation, but for my friends who weren't African-American, they don't have those connections or experiences, so you're more open to other interpretations, and you're more open to be more likely to get the benefit of the doubt. Now, it's not a right or a wrong thing. It's a perspective thing. It feels like what you're saying is it's a perspective thing. The experiences you have paint the way you'll see the world. So if you've had these experiences and every time I try to talk to you, you ain't talking, I interpret that as you don't love me. I've made you, you know, I will always go back to that frame of reference.
Right.
Wow, that's powerful. We'll put a pin in that. Maybe we'll come back and explore that again a little bit more next week, because that actually scares me. Because how do you know what thoughts and feelings, and it makes me think of some other things, that how do you know what thoughts and feelings are yours? How do you know what thoughts and feelings are valid? How do you know what you do and what you say and how you respond doesn't come from fear or doesn't come from some isolated bad situations? We have these situations. They just become our reality. The things that happen to us, they just become our reality.
You're asking the real questions now.
So maybe that's where we're up on the hour. Maybe that's where we're starting next week. Good stuff. Good stuff. Again, as we always say, station identification. This is WMUL 88.1 FM, Marshall University. We want to always, again, we thank WMUL as well as Marshall University for giving us this platform to have some of these conversations and to talk about some of these issues, these mental health issues and real things and real situations that people are going through. As I always say, we thank you for listening. We thank you for your support. For those that will have any questions, comments, or suggestions, you can email us at b2bpsych@gmail.com. That's b2b, psych, psych, b2bpsych@gmail.com. Again, this is Dr. Hinton, and Dr. Chapman always takes us out. But as I always say, graveyards are full of regret and potential. Make sure that you die empty. Make sure that you are loving the people who you love, make sure they know, and make sure you are living a life that makes you feel fulfilled and that sets your soul on fire. And peace and blessings to everybody out there. And Dr. Chapman will take us out.
So I guess what I would say is, you know, I started out telling you about how a number of my students, unfortunately, are experiencing grief because of COVID, and got friends that are experiencing that too. And I think one thing that you can wrap into what we talked about today, we started out with that meme. There were two parts of the meme. The meme you saw where the young brother was a little boy, and then had some emotion. He was crying. His mother told him, basically, boys and men don't cry. Then you see the top part. Years later, he's a grown man now, and his girlfriend wants to know why he doesn't show emotion. I think one thing that might be helpful when you think about other people, remember that you're seeing that person through your lens. A simple thing, but something that we forget. A lot of times when we get stuck in arguments or conflict, we're seeking to be understood instead of to understand. I think if you can ask yourself the basic question and think about the top and bottom of that meme, like, what is it that really might be the root of this? Not like that you're trying to figure it out, not that you're trying to say this person has a psychological disorder or any of those things, but the root of this might not be what you think it is. In that case, it would be easy for her to think the root of this is that he doesn't care about me. He's thinking about other women. He's thinking about other things in his life. He doesn't show me any emotion because he's cold-blooded, and he's a monster. And these monsters, there are real monsters in the world, but there's also monsters that we create. And then the problem is, if we create a monster ourselves, or put somebody in a prison with these labels of things and ways that we think they are, there is no way they can break free because you're the warden, you got the key, and they won't be able to get it from you. So ask yourself, am I putting this person in a prison? Stereotypes are not just about racism, sexism, ageism. They're also about what we do with people we know, people we love, and people we think we know close enough or good enough to put them in a box or a prison. So maybe this holiday season, think about unlocking the prison. We'll see you next week.
Yes, it's been maybe a month or so. The news.